The North Sound Energy Week with Active Payroll. Become part of an award-winning team. Go to activepayroll.com/careers for your next move.
Hello and welcome to the North Sound Energy Week podcast. I'm Finlay Duncan. This week, Airbus announces a redesign of its EC225 helicopter gearboxes. A report says oil and gas is worth billions to the UK economy, and Holyrood's energy minister says the renewables plan is on target. But first, an Aberdeen energy firm celebrating after winning the Queen's Award for Enterprise for a second year. Online Electronics designs and manufactures pipeline monitoring systems. In the past 5 years, it's entered 30 new markets across the world. Spokeswoman Claire Gribble says the company has high hopes for the future.
We are looking to, this year, have a record year for turnover and profit, with growth largely coming from overseas sales. And we're looking to just to build on our growth from our international hubs.
An independent subsea design and engineering firms won a multi-million pound contract. NSUB's deal with ROV service provider involves designing and manufacturing ultra-deepwater work-class ROV launch and recovery systems. They'll be installed in the Siona's new-build multiple-lay vessel, Siona Amazon. The equipment, which will take around 6 months to design and build, will be installed in the third quarter of this year and begin operation in January next year. A new chair has been appointed to the Offshore Wind Industry Council. Ben Sykes of Dong Energy Wind Power has been appointed to the body, which acts as a strategic partnership forum between the UK government and the offshore wind industry. Its role is to drive offshore wind deployment and bring down costs. Labour is accusing the Scottish Government of failing to tackle fuel poverty. SNP Housing Minister Margaret Burgess says the UK Government is cutting £50 million from schemes to tackle the problem in Scotland. But Labour's Shadow Welfare Secretary Jackie Bailey says 900,000 households, a third of Scottish families, are now living in fuel poverty.
Energy Action Scotland now estimate that it's 900,000 households across Scotland. That's more than a third of households in fuel poverty, and frankly that's a national scandal.
This week, the brother of one of the men killed in a North Sea helicopter crash says his family's gone through 5 years of heartache. 34-year-old Nolan Goble from Norwich was just one of 16 men who died when their Super Puma L2 crashed into the sea in April 2009. His brother Bob spoke after an inquest into his death in midweek, claiming in England you wouldn't let such disregard for health and safety go unpunished, but it seems the law is different in Scotland. The Crown Office has already ruled out prosecutions following a fatal accident inquiry earlier this year, and Bond Helicopter says it continues to learn lessons from the FAI. It comes as Airbus announces a redesigned gearbox, the EC225 model, with manufacture now underway. Airbus say the new design eliminates all three factors which had caused the fault, and add it will prevent a repeat of the two control ditchings in the North Sea in 2012. Jake Malloy from the RMT union says there's light at the end of the tunnel for their members.
Well, it's been a long time coming, but we've got light at the end of the tunnel now with the newly developed shafts, which should completely eliminate the potential for the events we saw during the 6 months of 2012, yeah.
And in terms of the amount of work that's going into replacing them, you know, Airbus, Eurocopter, saying they've tackled three key areas where they see what caused the original problems. Do you think now there's been enough research, enough investigation into what's caused it?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're reliant on the experts in that field, you know, the guys that do the testing of metals, that look at lubricants and the propagation of cracks and all of that good stuff. So we've been relied on. In fact, we've had 4 tiers of assurance regarding the suitability of the new shafts, which should in themselves eliminate the extensive maintenance procedures that have been put in place for repeated checks. So all in all, it should boost, hopefully at least, the confidence of the workforce that we're finally turned the corner with the EC225.
You mentioned the 4 tiers of reassurance. Are your members feeling reassured enough about this new part?
Well, given what's going on with helicopter safety generally, there's a massive job of work to be done to build confidence in workers. But if we get a good run at it now, incident-free, and these things prove themselves, then I'm sure that will go a long way to rebuilding the confidence which has been pretty badly damaged this last few years.
The North Sound Energy Week with Active Payroll. Become part of an award-winning team. Go to activepayroll.com/careers for your next move.
The North Sea oil and gas industry must tackle rising production costs, according to a report. A study from EY suggests it could affect the sector's competitiveness internationally. It's also warning of the continuing problem of a skill shortage. Gordon Ballard is chairman of the Oil and Gas Industry Council.
It's positive, but also raises a few alarm bells. A lot of them well known, and a lot of them expanded upon. And I think it's very timely, along with the Wood Report, sets out what we need to do. You know, the industry will take note of this and has to act.
In terms of the alarm bells, do you feel that's something that the industry is already working to address?
Yes, I think the people know what's happening. What this is doing is setting it down in numbers and setting down the context. And as I said, also linked to the Wood Report, which makes them start reading. It's set out, here's the prize, here's what needs to be done. But it also explains what happens if we don't do it.
It seems to set out that there is still a huge value in the oil and gas sector. Do you see any sign, you know, people sometimes talk about the oil running out, but at the moment it seems very much like it has a long-term future.
Yes, it does. But we have to be very careful. Costs are rising too fast. We're an international market, and we need to be very careful. You know, we have a prize, but if we're not careful and we don't take action around costs and skills, we will not maximise it. And that's what we're all trying to do. We're all trying to maximise the opportunity. It would be a shame to leave oil on the ground, either because it's too expensive to extract or because we price ourselves out of the business.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned it being an international market. For keeping costs down, is that something the UK can do on its own, or do you need an international consensus?
No, I think it can do itself on its own. It can, has to look very carefully at equipment fit for purpose, has to look at very carefully at getting enough people. You know, there's a huge wage inflation just now, huge shortage of people. That's not useful. It's not good. We are fortunate to be able to provide lots of people jobs, so we should be encouraging that, more apprenticeships, etc. So I think it is in our hands. Clearly, things like the price of the product is international, but we can absolutely deal with a lot of these issues ourselves.
Yeah, we also mentioned skill shortage. That's been a lot of talk in the last couple of years within the oil industry. Is enough being done to sort of fill those gaps, or do you think we're at least seeing the ball rolling on that?
I think perhaps you'd be correctly seeing the ball rolling. The sense I get is people understand, so they've now understand where the challenges are, and we are starting to do things like work with the military, putting in place more formal apprenticeship schemes through OPITO, but people need to use them. I mean, companies need to stand up and not just take the easy option of hiring the guy from down the street. They need to actually use these apprenticeships, actually stand up and do the right thing.
The study did say the sector's worth around £35 billion to the UK economy. Partner at EY, Alex Millward, said they spoke to a number of firms about the current climate.
We've studied a subset of the overall oil and gas industry, and that subset, the direct supply chain supplying the operators, concludes that it is a material economic contribution to UK. It is a revenue of £35 billion per annum. It does contribute a significant amount of tax through that revenue, 0.5 billion corporate tax and 1 billion in PAYE. And it does employ 127,000 people directly within that, plus another 70,000 offshore as well, plus in the indirect, and the operators employ further employees up to approximately 450,000 people in total in the industry. So it's a significant and material part of UK economy.
And certainly a large slice of it seems to be exports. Is that an upward trend, or is that very much as it's been in the past few years?
So we've studied between 2008 and 2012 all of the information recorded in Company House, and it stayed at a relatively consistent 45 to 40 to 42% across that period. So roughly in the last year of the report, 2012, $15 billion of revenue generated through export. And I think when we look at some of the actions, that's certainly one of the things which needs to be seriously reflected and thought through by the industry.
In terms of the oil and gas firms that is material to them, were they all coming to you with similar concerns? Was it a broad consensus?
Yeah, so we did a number of one-to-one meetings with individuals and then got people together collectively In group discussion forums about what some of the threats and the barriers are that they see. We saw a number of common themes from them as the Wood Review, have heard around cost inflation, salary inflation, scarcity of skills. Aberdeen as a location, is the infrastructure here, is the connectivity to those international export markets from here. Is it all working symbiotically with each other? So those concerns were fairly consistent across all participants.
UK government support for a major northeast renewable project being hailed as a massive boost to green growth and jobs. The Beatrice offshore wind farm in the Moray Firth is expected to add a further 650 megawatts of low carbon electricity to our energy mix. Holyrood's energy minister has told a conference that Scotland's more than halfway to meeting its renewables target. Fergus Ewing says the Scottish Government's delivered 285 megawatts of community and locally owned green energy. The Conservative Party plans to scrap subsidies for new onshore wind farms if it wins the next general election. But Mr Ewing told my colleague Derek Ferguson that's at odds with his views.
We've brought together communities, companies, HIE and the council, group of experts, Scottish Government, and really, a lot of things have been achieved in the Highlands. A lot of jobs have been created. A lot of developments are going ahead. Many communities now have schemes or are working to build schemes which will deliver hundreds of thousands of pounds or more in community benefits. So there's a lot of good things happening, and the Scottish Government is fully behind this and wants to see it continue. And today we've been debating how best we do that. And over the last year, for example, we've seen 50 more community schemes gaining loan funding from the Scottish Government of nearly £3 million. And for every one of these communities, this can really be transformative in helping to make them more sustainable, help young people find a job or get an education. This is really important stuff for the Highlands and Islands. So as the Inverness and Nairn MSP, I'm very pleased that it's happening and that so many companies are coming to Inverness, increasingly seen as a renewable energy hub for Scotland and Britain.
Okay. How would you respond to noises from the Westminster government that they will cut subsidies to onshore projects if they get in 2015?
Well, I would respond by saying this. I think in politics, you make your manifesto and your strategy and you stick to it. You don't let yourself be blown around by the political breezes. Of course, there are some people that are not happy about what we're doing, and I respect and listen to them. But we have a plan. It is supported, I think, by a clear majority who see the world needs renewable energy and Scotland is best placed with the resources we have, the engineering excellence and the UHI and research capabilities to take advantage of that. That is what we're doing. We will continue to do that. And it's not helpful to see the down south, in particular the Conservatives, chop and change, go with the breeze, running scared of UKIP. That's no way to govern a country.
And rounding off the week, Aberdeen-based Wood Groups signed a multi-million pounds deal in the US. The contract, worth £7.2 million, is for operations and maintenance at a new electric generation facility. The firm's GTS wing provides services in East Texas for the Apex Bethel Energy Centre. It's due to begin operation in 2017, with Wood Group's deal lasting 3 years. Don't forget, for the latest news in the energy sector, tune into our special North Sound Energy Bulletins each weekday morning during Greg's 8 Breakfast and the Robin Galloway Breakfast Show. That's it for this week. This has been the North Sound Energy Week podcast. I'm Finlay Duncan.
The North Sound Energy Week with Active Payroll. Become part of an award-winning team. Go to activepayroll.com/careers for your next move.